Welcome to Brighteon Broadcast News for Thursday, July 13th, 2023. I'm Mike Adams. Thank you for joining me today. Wasn't that a riot yesterday? The whole bit with J.P. Sears and then Mickey Willis and the life jackets. Oh, my goodness. You know that, like, of course, none of that was scripted. That was just everybody ad-libbing. That was just spontaneous comedy from all of us. And we all had a great time. And I hope we get a chance to do it again soon because people loved it as well. You know, we do have to laugh sometimes at ourselves, sometimes with each other, about ourselves or each other. It's okay to laugh. It's okay to make fun of ourselves from time to time. And, you know, I mean, we have to release some of the tension that is just occupying people's consciousness out there. It's, look, the world can be pretty dark and gloomy, you know? I mean, the number one film right now is about child sex trafficking. Oh, and by the way, I believe we're going to have an interview for you about that film. I think tomorrow, we'll see. But the economy, you know, not doing well, right? Not in reality, despite the government's fudged numbers. You know, the country's $32 trillion in debt, and they're printing trillions more every day. The money system is a joke, you know. Things can be pretty doom and gloom, and that's why we have to be able to laugh sometimes. But we also need to, of course, talk about healing. And one of the topics on healing that I haven't covered in a while, but I'm covering it today with a really great interview, very informative interview with Ananda Moore. And she has a film called Magic Pills. And you can read about this at magicpillsmovie.com. And it's a film about homeopathy and how homeopathy is clinically effective, that it works and it's scientifically validated to work. And it works because of the laws of physics. It doesn't violate the laws of physics. It doesn't, you know, fabricate its own magic. And actually, the title of the film, Magic Pills, is a play on the critics who criticize homeopathy. They say, oh, magic pills, it's just magic. But it's not. It's actually physics, it turns out. And it's just physics that not everybody in the modern world understands yet, because people are small-minded, you know? We live in a materialist world where they're still trying to smash atoms together to find the God particle, you know, in the particle accelerators. Like, where's the God particle in this mess? Sifting through the trace routes of it. I was like, where's the God particle? If we could just find the God particle. Maybe it's not a particle. Have you ever thought of that? Probably not a particle. Probably way more to it than that. Probability wave, you know, M theory, whatever, string theory. There's a lot more to it. Anyway, homeopathy works in a way that is consistent with the laws of the cosmos. Otherwise, it could not work, because there isn't actually magic. There is only cause and effect, and homeopathy operates within that structure of cause and effect. So that interview is coming up here today. Just stay tuned. It'll be after the audio segment of this show. We'll be featuring Ananda Moore with Magic Pills Movie. Now, in case you missed it, we published episode 3 of Decentralize.tv. That got published then yesterday, and it's about Local Monero, which is, how do you call it? It's a decentralized exchange where people buy and sell Monero, kind of like Craigslist listings, in a way, in like classified ads, basically, buying and selling crypto. It's truly peer-to-peer. It's decentralized. You don't go through a central exchange. For some trades, there's no KYC required. And it was a fascinating interview. If you missed it, you might want to check it out. It's on decentralized.tv. Now, what I found fascinating is how many people texted me or talked to me after that interview, after they listened to it or watched it. And they said, wow, you know, Mike, this is the first time that I realized I'm going to have to learn about crypto in order to navigate the future of finance. In other words, they realized from this interview that crypto isn't something they can just ignore and just kind of wave off as like, oh, that's just some other little online game that people play, which is what I used to think of it, too. It's much more than that. The monetary systems are going digital. Central bank digital currencies are being aggressively pushed, and they will be rolled out across the United States, Canada, the UK, and so on. They're already being rolled out in small ways in many countries. And under CBDCs, they will control your money. They will freeze your accounts if they don't like your speech. They will automatically deduct what they think you owe in taxes or penalties or fines. And so CBDCs are a slave system. And if you don't mind being a slave, you love that system, you probably don't have to learn anything. Just go with what they tell you to do, and you'll be automatically a slave. But if you want to have control over your future, then you're going to need to master the subject, or at least learn about it, become literate in it, understand how it works, understand your options. And that's what people were starting to pick up from that interview about local Monero. And the thing is, that interview is not even really about just Monero. What you learn in that interview applies to all kinds of crypto, especially privacy coins, which are, I think, the best kind of coins because, well, they offer privacy protections. But if we hope to navigate what's coming and to have our privacy intact and our assets intact and to interact with honest ledger systems that aren't rigged by central banks or rigged by governments through endless digital money printing, then we need to understand crypto. And that's why I'm diving into this with such zeal. So we have another interview coming up on decentralized.tv. And that interview, the next one, is with Jim Gale, the food forest abundance guy. And that interview is all about decentralization of the food supply. See, it's about more than just finance. It's also about food and medicine and education and lots of things. Wait till you see some of the guests we have coming up. But watch for the Jim Gale episode to be posted either today or tomorrow, probably. Looks like Food Forest Abundance. You're going to love it. It's a very powerful episode. And then Todd Pittner, my co-host on the show, he ended up hiring Jim Gale's crew to design and implement a food forest in his backyard. And he paid for that design using private digital money, by the way. Crypto. See, lots of ways you can use it to build your own abundance, in this case, food forest abundance. So, fascinating episode coming up. You won't want to miss it. Now, here's a headline that's disturbing. Seattle Public Schools, this is from the UK Daily Mail. Seattle Public Schools will offer gender-affirming care. That means child mutilations, by the way. To students as young as 11 years old, at no cost. You know, because they got to make mutilations free so that more children sign up for it. As critics say, it's a whole new level of awful for schools to be involved. This is a service that is described in documents obtained by Parents Defending Education. And the service is provided by medical provider Country Doctor Community Health Centers. And they're run by a nonprofit provider whose mission is to, quote, promote health in transgender, non-binary, and gender-diverse communities. And by health, of course, they mean mutilations, right? It's like women's health means murdering your unborn baby. And gender-affirming care means mutilating children. So I guess instead of calling them Seattle Public Schools, we could just call them Seattle Pubic Schools. Just leave out the L. Seattle Pubic Schools will mutilate your children and install bonus holes at no charge to you, the parents. And in fact, if you don't go along with it, parents, you might lose custody of your children because we will say that you, the parents, are insane to not recognize the gender dysphoria of your children. They're the sane ones. You're insane for thinking that DNA is a real thing and that men are men and women are women. So this is another example of the kind of demonic insanity. 11-year-old children are going to be routinely mutilated in mutilation factories run by the public schools in places like Seattle. So do you realize that cities like Seattle and Portland and San Francisco and so on, they're going to be churning out, I mean, they're basically child mutilation factory centers who will be churning out victims of this transgenderism insanity, who will be scarred for life psychologically and physically. They are creating an entire generation of future traumatized patients that will need lifelong counseling or psychiatric care, even physical care, bonus hole care. There's all kinds of care they're going to need because they're being damaged and mutilated. And this is all, of course, celebrated by the Marxist radical left. Think about that. Yeah, chemical mutilations, chemical violence against children, and all part of public schools. One more reason to homeschool, folks. If you turn your children over to government schools, don't be surprised if they come home without their genitals. That is about to happen, yes. Now, not to leave everybody else out of the picture here, you know, globalists like Bill Gates, of course, got to make sure that the harm is more widespread than just school children. So here's an article from childrenshealthdefense.org. Bill Gates and the WHO envision a future where vaccine patches could be mailed directly to people's homes. Yeah. So Gavi, the Vaccine Alliance, and the World Health Organization, and the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation are among those organizations pushing a new vaccine technology that uses patches instead of needles to maximize the reach of vaccines to the most remote location on the planet. So, uses patches instead of needles. It's a game changer. It's groundbreaking. It's backed by, like I said, Gavi, Bill and Melinda Gates, WHO. They use, quote, microarray patches or microneedle patches. And they claim that these can inject you with mRNA vaccines. No needles required, just a lot of little microneedles. And according to the Gavi organization, these microneedle vaccines are pre-dosed, and it simplifies the administration, which can be carried out by minimally trained volunteers, you know, enforcers who will stick the patch on you. Now, by the way, it's pretty easy for them to stick a patch on you without your consent. You know, it's much harder for them to actually inject you with a needle if you don't want it. And if they're waving a needle around, you know, that it looks like assault. But if they just put a patch on you, it's going to be harder to argue that that's assault. Because they're going to say, oh, just put a patch on you. It's just a patch. It's approved. It's emergency use. It's safe. It's effective. You know, it's easy. It doesn't hurt. Lower levels of pain. And yet you've been medically assaulted with a transhumanism biological weapon, by the way. So get ready for this. And of course, they want to mail them out to your home, just like they mail ballots in every election. So you'll probably get a stack of ballots and a few vaccines to, you know, spread around the household and inject your children, inject your spouse, inject yourself multiple times, booster one, booster two, inject your dogs. This is the crazy, insane Bill Gates reality that's coming. And of course, anybody dumb enough to actually, you know, put these patches on themselves or their children will remove themselves from the future of the human gene pool, which is exactly the point of all of this. It is, of course, a depopulation push. Now, there's big news about Ukraine and NATO. You may have seen this, that Zelensky was invited to the NATO summit where he was demanding that Ukraine be made a member of NATO immediately so that Article 5 could be invoked and all of NATO could go to war against Russia and we could have World War III. That was Zelensky's greatest wish, that you just need to start World War III. Well, he was rejected by NATO. Isn't that interesting? And NATO is actually backing away from supporting Zelensky right now. They're basically saying that Ukraine will not enter NATO unless Ukraine wins this war with Russia, essentially. That was actually by Secretary General Jens Stoltenberg, or I don't know how you pronounce his name. Jens Stoltenberg, ahead of the NATO summit. Said that we will provide support to Ukraine as long as it takes, but unless Ukraine wins the war, there will be no membership issue to be discussed at all. So it's like, hey, Zelensky, first you need to beat Russia, and then we'll invite you into NATO. Isn't that interesting? That has changed quite dramatically. And Zelensky is saying, guys, how are we supposed to beat Russia? We're losing. The only way we can beat Russia is if NATO goes to war with Russia, which would be World War III. So, kind of a conundrum that Zelensky is in. And it makes me wonder if now the West is really looking for off-ramps to this conflict. And I've warned the people of Ukraine before that you, any of you listening from Ukraine, very sad to say, the way the United States will treat you is the way the U.S. Empire has treated people all over the world. They will exploit you and get you killed and then discard you and forget about you and move on to the next issue. Your country will be left in shambles like the U.S. did in Libya or Iraq or, you know, a lot of other countries all over the world, in Central and South America and so on. And the wave of support for Ukraine will be replaced by a new wave of virtue signaling for something else, whatever the next thing is. Might be, you know, a revolution in the U.S. I don't know, outrage against cops or something. So people's memories are very short, and Ukraine, sadly, will be forgotten by the oblivious American masses very quickly. And then Ukraine will be left with the aftermath of the depleted uranium weapons that are now apparently being used in Ukraine by, you know, Western forces. But it makes me wonder why NATO and the USA is trying to find an exit out of Ukraine. They need an exit in order to save face. And the reason they need that exit is because Western forces have run out of munitions. And we knew they were running out all this time, and now they have really reached the end of the current supply chain. And unless there's a lot more manufacturing cranked up real soon, which can't happen, then there just won't be enough shells to ship to Ukraine for Ukraine to do much with them. And so, you know, they've resorted to cluster bombs recently because there's kind of some of the only munitions they have left for these artillery rounds. And so I was actually thinking that, hey, once the U.S. runs out of munitions and artillery and rockets and whatever, what they should do, you know, is if they really want to destroy Russia, they should airdrop fiat currency all over Russia in order to devalue the savings of the Russian people and cause economic distress and suffering and inflation. And then I thought, well, wait a second, they're already doing that, except they're doing that in America. Yes, it's called money printing and stimulus checks. So there's an economic war on America right now being waged by the Biden administration that is far worse than artillery, by the way. It's wrecking the economy and causing inflation. And then the government has the audacity to come along and say, well, according to our CPI numbers, inflation is only 3%. Yeah, it's because they don't count food. They don't count the things that people really buy. And they can mix and match whatever things they want to count in order to create whatever number they want to present. It's all a joke. It's all a fraud. Real inflation, it's still double digits, folks. It's still over 10% when you count food and the things that people buy. I mean, gosh, have you looked at how much it costs for rent lately? Or how about replacement parts for vehicles? You know, everything is going up in price. It's rather insane. And food on top of that as well. And services have gone up in price. And appliances and everything you can think of, almost, has gone up. But we're told the straight face, it's only 3%. No, it isn't. That's if you can't do math or something, maybe it's 3%. But if you can do math, it's obviously even higher than 10% and may still be closer to 20%, especially in some areas. But we're just told, hey, don't worry about it. We're just going to keep printing money. We're going to keep giving you money. We're going to keep funding the war. And don't worry about, you know, reality-oriented things like the fact that we've run out of munitions or that the dollar is becoming increasingly worthless or that your savings, the value of your savings is being debased, deteriorating because we keep printing money. Don't worry about those real things. We want you to focus on these fantasy things like suddenly all these convenient films of Jamie Foxx showing up everywhere. Oh, here's Jamie Foxx in an SUV rescuing a woman's purse. Oh, here's Jamie Foxx playing pickleball. Here's Jamie Foxx on a boat. Everybody talk about Jamie Foxx or his stunt double or whatever. Whatever is actually being captured in the photographs or CGI or who knows what it is. But you're just supposed to be distracted. Jamie Foxx, Jamie Foxx, Jamie Foxx. Instead of the fact that your wealth is being stolen from you by a dishonest money system rooted in fiat currency printing, which is a kind of just elaborate government fraud. Let's face it. If you operated in the same way in your own business, you might be prosecuted for fraud. But when the government does it, it's just called policy. But it's still fraud. Which, by the way, reminds me, if you want an honest system of money, it's the three things that I keep mentioning here. It's gold and silver and crypto. Honest systems of money. Even crypto, I now understand, crypto is an honest ledger. No one can counterfeit the coins on it. No one can just, you know, create another trillion new coins and stuff it into the Bitcoin blockchain. No. That's one reason that Bitcoin has value, is because no one can counterfeit it. You know, the what's the term? Resistance to debasement. And I didn't come up with that term. I heard someone else say that on an interview about crypto. They said one of the most important properties of digital money is resistance to debasement. That is, making sure that nobody can just print a bunch of new coins or new whatever it is. And even gold, by the way, physical gold. Why does it hold value? Well, because nobody can just create loads of new gold out of thin air. I mean, yeah, you can dig it up out of the ground with tremendous effort at tremendous cost, which means that gold itself is, in effect, how to put this, gold has a kind of a proof of work effect, which that's a term from crypto, where in order to mine Bitcoin, you have to demonstrate a sufficient level of proof of work, which is typically customized microprocessors, ASICs, carrying out mathematical algorithms and hashes and so on, and finding certain combinations, and then getting rewarded in crypto coins. That's called proof of work. And it means it's very difficult for anyone else to enter the system or to counterfeit the system or to rig the system, because you'd have to carry out a tremendous amount of computational work in order to do that. I mean, warehouses full of computers just to even have a shot at it. Well, gold is also a proof of work system in the physical kinetic world. If you have a gold coin in your hand and you look at it, that's proof of work, proof of digging, proof of sluicing, as it's called. You have a gold sluicing machine. Somebody's got to mine it. I mean, you know, with an excavator, and run it through a sluicer and then pull out the flakes. And somebody's got to collect the flakes and take them in and melt them down. And then there's got to be purity assays and so on, and maybe a second round of smelting and melting. And then they stamp it into a coin eventually after a huge number of steps. That all takes work. It all takes energy. There are energy inputs in gold that cannot be faked, because you can't just, you know, run down to the local stream and just dig out giant kilogram-sized gold nuggets. If you could, gold would be essentially worthless. You know, if gold was everywhere in everybody's yard, it'd just be called rocks, like pretty rocks, and it wouldn't be a system of money. So it's actually the proof of work and the proof of energy that goes into the gold, although in this case it's not a mathematical proof, it's just a physical kinetic proof. There's one of the things that creates gold scarcity, which creates intrinsic value and a store of value for gold. How do you know that gold will always be valuable? Because the supply is always limited. I mean, that's one of the main reasons. The supply is always limited, and it's hard to create. And that's one of the reasons why it's called hard money. It's hard to create. It's hard to counterfeit. It's hard to acquire. It's hard to find. It's hard to get. And so is Bitcoin or other cryptocurrency. I've recorded a special podcast with more discussion on this point, by the way, if you want to check that out. But I just think it's really important that we recognize this. So any government that can just print money easily, they just enter a new line, clickety-click-clack, boom, got another entry in their spreadsheet, and it's a trillion more. And then wait, 2 trillion. Let's just make it 10 trillion more. If they can do that, then... yeah, guess what? That money's not going to have any value in the long run, because it's not hard money. It's not hard to create. It's very easy to create. So, of course, they will not resist the temptation, and they will create money to the very end. They will keep printing trillions until it's worth nothing. They will lead us into hyperinflation of the money supply. So, there you go. All right, now getting back to Russia and Ukraine, this is an astonishing story. Now, this story, which is covered by the Gateway Pundit, by the way, but the original source is TASS, which is, of course, the propaganda news agency of Russia, okay? So I am going to point this out, that these numbers may be wildly exaggerated, but it's interesting to see what TASS is claiming the case to be. So TASS says that since the start of the Ukrainian counteroffensive, which began June 4th, and that was Kharkiv and Zaporizhia, Ukraine's losses have reached, again, this is what Russia is claiming, 26,000 men, that's not just killed but also wounded, and 3,000 items of various pieces of armament. And this comes from Shoigu, of Russia, the Russian defense minister. So he breaks it down. He says that Russian troops have destroyed 21 planes of Ukraine, 5 helicopters, and get this, 1,244 tanks and armored vehicles. That's a lot of Bradleys, by the way, in that mix. But they're claiming 1,200-plus tanks and armored vehicles. They claim they've destroyed 17 German-made Leopard tanks, which is a pretty significant portion of all the Leopard tanks that Germany even has. They say they've destroyed 5 AMX tanks produced by France and 12 U.S.-made Bradley infantry fighting vehicles. See, I mentioned the Bradleys. They say they've eliminated 914 pieces of automotive equipment, 2 air defense systems, 25 MLRS rocket systems, 403 field artillery cannons and mortars. They shot down 176 HIMARS rockets, 27 Storm Shadow cruise missiles, those are from the UK, and 483 drones of the Ukrainian armed forces. And so on and so forth. They go in. Basically, this is kind of a list, a bragging rights list of everything they've destroyed. Now, are these numbers accurate? Well, probably not. You know, probably some of these got counted twice. No doubt Ukraine would say, no, it's only 1/10 of that. You know, Russia may have exaggerated some of the numbers, perhaps on purpose, perhaps inadvertently in some cases. But even if these numbers are double the reality, these are still huge numbers. I mean, we're talking about parts of Ukraine have been turned into graveyards of military equipment. You know, not just tanks and armored vehicles, but also the M777 artillery units and whatever else has been deployed there, the German Leopard 2 tanks and so on. And the fact that this, or at least some version of this, is happening, again, it's impossible for you and I to know what the accurate numbers are. There's no way to know. But something horrible is happening, obviously, to a lot of equipment, and Ukraine is not reaching through. You know, this counteroffensive has not worked as intended. And I happen to think that the story we reported earlier, where Zelensky was at the NATO meeting and he was being shunned, apparently, reportedly, and NATO is backing away, like, nope, we're not going to bring you into NATO and just go to World War III. I think, this is my opinion, I think that Zelensky is now perceived as having failed. That he failed in a military sense. He failed to achieve a breakthrough. This counteroffensive has failed. It did not achieve a breakthrough that would have been necessary for additional PR to say, hey, we're winning, we just need a little extra push, send more tanks, or send more F-16s, or whatever. Zelensky has failed, and even NATO is no longer coming to the rescue, which means that there are really two outcomes here. Number one, that are likely. Number one is that the West will try to figure out a false flag event, like, you know, blowing up the Zaporizhia nuclear power plant, in order to blame Russia and to try to escalate NATO entering the war. That possibility seems to be waning now. It was very high not long ago when everybody was saying that everybody else was going to blow up the nuclear power plant, right? But I think that parties have backed off from that particular scenario at the moment for whatever reason. The other possibility is that NATO and the West are going to find an exit out of this, and they're going to abandon Zelensky and Ukraine and in one way or another result in the country collapsing. Because understand that Ukraine's entire country at this point is dependent on the West. The Ukrainian government can't even function without the salaries being paid by the United States and other Western countries. You know, we taxpayers are actually funding the entire operations of the Ukrainian government at this point. Without Western money, Ukraine is a collapsed state in about 2 weeks. And perhaps that's exactly where it's going. And perhaps at some point, the good people of Ukraine will overthrow their corrupt, treasonous criminal leader, Zelensky, and maybe prosecute him for his crimes against his countrymen and women. And perhaps they will install some better, more democratic government through an elections process. Perhaps. I don't know. It's a possibility. But in the meantime, doesn't look like they're going to beat Russia anytime soon. Now, it's worth mentioning in all of this that if peace were found, if peace could be achieved between Russia and Ukraine and Europe and so on, there would be an incredible peace dividend. You know, first of all, energy would become a lot less expensive across Western Europe if Nord Stream were repaired. And there would be less unemployment, you know, because so many people have lost their jobs due to high energy costs and so on. And also to the people of Ukraine. Instead of living in a war zone, what if you could live in an economy that was functioning again? Rebuilding your country and reestablishing supply chains and rejoining families and so on, people who've been separated by this horrific series of events. We need to find peace. And I think that the fault of all of this rests with, frankly, the United States right now. The United States kept provoking this, kept expanding NATO, kept threatening and you know, poking the bear, poking Russia, and saying, what are you going to do about it? What are you going to do about it? And eventually Russia did something about it, and now here we are with far too many innocent people suffering and people's lives destroyed and who knows how many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people dead at this point. It's a travesty. And it's the kind of suffering caused by tyrants who think that they alone get to decide the events of the world. The tyrants that are in a quest for power over others. And so they want war. They want conflict. They want control over national resources. They wanted to essentially occupy and take over Russia and seize its natural resources, which is what the U.S. empire excels at doing. Hence the war on Iraq, Syria, right? And lots of other places all around the world. It's always about resources, isn't it? Russia has one third of the world's natural resources. So you think this desire to destroy Russia is about, what, saving people, helping people? No. It's about taking possession of Russia's natural resources. America wants Russia's oil in the same way that Adolf Hitler wanted Russia's oil. Exactly the same way. That's why the Third Reich was moving to the east aggressively to try to get to the oil fields. And the steel factories as well, you know, and the iron ore and all the heavy industry that Russia has been enriched with for all these years. Adolf Hitler wanted that too. And of course, you know, he went too far with the Sixth Army and ended up getting surrounded outside of Stalingrad, among other places, and lost to the east. But Russia paid a very heavy price of at least 20 million men and many women who died in World War II. And you think that Russia isn't willing to sacrifice in order to protect its, you know, motherland, Mother Russia? You think they're just going to give up and just allow the U.S. empire to come in and take all their resources and destroy their culture and take down their country and destroy their economy? No, no, Russia's not going to do that. They're not going to go down like Gaddafi in Libya that Hillary Clinton was laughing about. Yeah, we came, we saw, we kicked his ass, we conquered, we killed him. That's the way Western leaders think. They are lunatics. They are psychopaths. And so the only way that we, the people, ever win in these situations is to, frankly, well, the real answer is to stop supporting the money printing system, because it's the money printing system that enables war. If the governments of the world that are causing war, like the U.S. government, if they couldn't print money to fund the wars, then the wars wouldn't happen. And the only reason they can print money and get away with it is because so many other people are using their money. And so they print money against a massive M2 money supply, and it allows them, you know, to steal the power of your money because there are so many other trillions in circulation. Well, rejecting the central bank fiat currency system is one of the best ways to stop war. Understand that? That's the big point here. You want peace in the world? End the Fed. You want peace in the world? Use honest money, gold, silver, and crypto. You take the power away from the lunatics, the psychopaths in the Justice Department, in the Homeland Security, in the State Department, Victoria Nuland and Blinken and others. You take power away from them when you take your money out of the fiat currency system and you move to gold or silver or crypto. It is one of the most powerful and yet kind of rebellious and courageous acts that you can engage in. You want peace in the world? Start using honest money and stop supporting the fiat currency rigged ledger, the dishonest ledger system that allows them to print the money, to build the weapons, to fund the wars that cause untold human suffering and death. That's the answer. Stop the Fed and you stop the death. Peace can only come through honest trade, by the way. Honest trade is only sustainable when powered by honest money. And honest money can never be fiat currencies. They are inherently dishonest. Honest money has to be something that is transactable, shall we say, on a global scale, something that is borderless, something that is relatively rapid, that is low cost, to send and receive money to clear payments. Is there anything like that that exists, anything in the world? Not the SWIFT system that's been weaponized, and it's slow, and it's clunky, and it's not secure. What about writing checks? That sucks, and it takes forever to clear. Is there anything that actually works? Cryptocurrency. Bitcoin being the biggest one right now, and Monero being the biggest privacy coin. These things actually work. International transactions cleared within minutes. Immutable, irreversible. You can trust the transaction when it's done. You could use these in every country in the world to buy and sell literally anything. That's why I think now that Bitcoin will become the world reserve digital currency of choice, because again, it's an honest system. And I still say this as someone who barely owns any Bitcoin. I have some fraction of one Bitcoin. I might have a couple thousand dollars in Bitcoin. So I'm not here shilling Bitcoin because I'm a big holder of Bitcoin. I personally prefer privacy coins over Bitcoin. And if I were to acquire Bitcoin, though, I would just acquire it to hold it for later use. I actually wouldn't want to make purchases day-to-day in Bitcoin. I would use something like Monero for that, or something that's sufficiently, you know, rapid and liquid and also private. But nevertheless, isn't it interesting to come to this conclusion that myself, being someone who was a longtime critic of Bitcoin, now realizing that Bitcoin can actually end wars and violence in our world by ending the source of money printing that enables the psychopaths in government to wage violence against the innocent people of the world all over the world. Yeah, an honest money system can achieve great things. So yes, we can pray for peace, but we could also do something about it. We can begin that migration into honest money systems that no government can manipulate. Systems that are compatible with human abundance, productivity, peace, and freedom. You vote with your dollars, or in this case, you vote with your crypto. You vote by selling the dollars for crypto, in essence. You vote by what you hold. If you hold dollars, you're supporting the dollar system, which is a system of war and violence and fraud and lies and biological weapons and depopulation. The more dollars you hold, the more you enable the criminals of the world to print more dollars. The fewer dollars you hold, the more power you take away from them. And the same is true if you hold gold or silver. You're selling dollars and acquiring gold and silver that the government cannot counterfeit. So gold and silver and crypto all belong in this category that I'm talking about. These are honest money systems, and they are methods that lead us to peace. And also, by definition, much smaller government, which is almost synonymous with peace, by the way. Muy tranquilo. All right. With that said, we're about to jump into the interview with Ananda Moore of the Magic Pills movie. I want to remind you of our sponsors today. If you are interested in gold and silver, don't forget to check out the Treasure Island Coins and Precious Metals Company, which has been our sponsor in that space for many years. An honest operation, very competitive pricing, discreet, insured, guaranteed delivery. You take physical possession. It's in your custody. You can reach them at metalswithmike.com. And just so that you know, I don't earn any kind of commissions or affiliate fees of any kind. They're just a straight-up sponsor, and their prices are very, very good. There's no room for them to pay commissions of any kind. And right now, the premiums are very low on gold and silver because very few people, relatively few, are buying it right now. So this is actually one of the best times to buy gold and silver when there's not a mad rush to buy gold and silver. And all the gold and silver sales, by the way, nationwide have been down in the last 6 weeks or so, down significantly, especially following the Silicon Valley Bank collapse earlier this year, during which there was an explosion of demand for gold and silver that has now reversed to where it's like silence at the moment. This is the moment to take advantage of the low premiums instead of buying it high when everybody's panicked and trying to get it all at the same time. Get it now while it's actually a lot more affordable. As a disclaimer, of course, I'm not your financial advisor. Do your own research. I don't make any price predictions about gold or silver. And I'm not your financial advisor, I hope. What I try to teach is critical thinking so that each of us can be our own financial decision makers based on our own, you know, individual needs and experience and research and so on. So thank you for your support, metalswithmike.com. And if you want to support our online store, of course, it's healthrangerstore.com. Thank you for your support there for our lab-verified products, nutritional products, superfoods, storable foods, and much more. With that said, let's jump into the interview with Ananda Moore. This is about homeopathy. This is about how the universe works, actually. This is a very fascinating interview. Whether you use homeopathy or not, you're going to learn some fascinating things here that you can apply to other areas of your life. So enjoy the interview. Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And today we have a very special guest for you who is the creator of an extraordinary film. And it's called Magic Pills. And there's kind of a twist on that name. But her name is Ananda Moore. She joins us to talk about this project, her film, and also homeopathy and natural medicine in general. So welcome, Ananda, to the show. It's great to have you on.
Thank you so much. Thanks for having me here.
And well, it's our pleasure. Thank you for taking the time. Now, let me give out your film website first here. It's magicpillsmovie.com. And just so that people aren't confused about the name, you know, it's kind of mocking the criticism against homeopathy. Tell us about what's the film about and why the name Magic Pills?
Well, the film starts with exploring how mainstream media has shaped the narrative of homeopathy as something that's impossible, unscientific. And then I go on to explore some really large-scale campaigns around the world. We look at cancer treatment in India. We look at AIDS treatment in Africa. And we look at the use of homeopathy to stop epidemics in Cuba. And this was all done before COVID happened. So the film came out in 2017, actually. And I think had this knowledge been allowed to be disseminated, things could be a little bit different today.
Yeah, for sure. Also, COVID brought out the fact that apparently the entire scientific establishment, medical establishment, believes there's no such thing as an immune system either. Not just homeopathy, but there's no immunity that's
right.
Natural. So they're kind of exposing themselves, aren't they, in all of this?
Yeah, I mean, I hate saying that the scientists believe this because I think the scientific community is so big. And now with cancel culture, we've canceled a lot of the science. Like, if you look at homeopathy and you actually look at the body of evidence done by top scientists working at top universities around the world, there's no way you could say, oh, that homeopathy doesn't work.
Yeah, so it's interesting to me how modern medicine, which is very material, right? It's very structural.
Mechanical.
And anything that they don't understand, they claim it doesn't exist, right? Which is just crazy. I mean, you know, I've read books like from Rupert Sheldrake, you know, Morphic Resonance and so on. And that actually provides one of the explanations for why homeopathy does have effects. It does have physiological effects as the science bears out. I mean, why do you think it's so difficult for people to get their hands around this? Is it just because they can't see it under a microscope or what?
Well, as my film shows, you can actually see it under the microscope.
Really?
Which is really cool. We look at how they're now finding nanoparticles of source material in really, really high potencies. And just to explain to the audience, the controversy around homeopathy is this idea that there's nothing in it because it's highly diluted and goes past Avogadro's number when we... So according to conventional science, there should be nothing left in that solution that we're giving as a medicine to someone.
Right.
But research has come out of IIT Bombay, the Institute for Technology in Bombay, shows that under electron microscopes, we can actually see source material in very high potencies of remedies, which brings up a lot of questions around our beliefs and how we understand things. Another aspect is, well, the reasons why I think it's so hard for allopathy to wrap its head around it in conventional science circles right now is because, one, it kind of changes our core belief, our core values, and flips everything on its head.
Right.
So now you're saying that the body isn't just mechanical. It isn't just a series of chemical reactions going on in the body. There's so much more to it. We're looking at the mental and emotional and the energetic state of a human being and how they're affected from an energetic perspective.
Absolutely.
And we're looking at how information can be transferred in ways and through energy and through water, which doesn't necessarily always make sense from the first conventional look. But if you look at quantum physics, you look at electromagnetic fields and how they affect the body, it makes absolute sense that homeopathy should be able to act.
You bring up some really critical points here. So I think one of the reasons the medical establishment doesn't want to acknowledge this influence over physiology that is imparted by homeopathy is because then they might have to acknowledge 5G, electropollution, interference with human physiology, or, you know, high voltage power lines or what have you, all this electropollution that takes place. And yet, in my own research, I keep finding time and time again, there are so many examples that prove that there is this, what Sheldrake calls a morphic resonance that is true. For example, I learned that the molecule known as xylitol, the alternative sweetener, xylitol used to be liquid at room temperature all over the world. And one day, these crystals started to form at room temperature, and liquid xylitol became solid xylitol. And it did this simultaneously all over the world. And from that point forward, no one could make it liquid at room temperature. They have to make it hotter and melt it. And it was as if the crystals were sharing information about structure. And this was also true with other pharmaceuticals that were being manufactured by drug companies. And they had to reformulate their molecules because they began to crystallize all over the world at the same time. So that defies materialism right there.
Absolutely. Wow, that's new to me. Thank you for sharing that. I'm going to check that out. I also think another reason they don't want homeopathy to really enter the mainstream is because you can't patent it. You
right.
can replicate it very easily. You can make millions of doses from a tiny amount of material. And if it works, which I believe it does, and I think the science tells us it does, then the pharmaceutical industry can lose a lot of money.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's the most obvious reason why, journals don't want to publish information. They're reliant on pharmaceutical funding to maintain the medical journals going.
Yes.
Universities rely on pharmaceutical funding, so it's hard for students to be allowed to do research into homeopathy.
Absolutely.
And there's a whole institutional system in place that makes it very difficult to forward alternative medicine.
So I'm curious about what your film covered in terms of COVID. When did the film, when was it just released or when was it released?
No, the film was released in 2017.
Oh my gosh. Okay.
So well, totally predates COVID.
Oh, wow. You're going to have to do a follow up.
Yes, I do. And it's interesting because there's a few homeopathic organizations that came together and created databases to follow up on how patients with COVID were doing using just homeopathic medicine as treatment.
And
so there's a lot of
how did that go for them? I mean, are there in the homeopathic community, are there protocols that are accepted for maybe spike protein contamination or SARS-CoV-2?
Yeah, there are. I mean, there with homeopathy being highly individualized, we tend to take a patient at a time, but we've noticed certain patterns and we've seen that certain remedies tend to be effective. And then those change as the disease progresses, or as I would even say the environmental influences change. So, but homeopathy has been very effective in my eyes. And I think soon we're gonna have all that data out there that we can mine and really see how it did. We have a lot of data around the 1918 flu pandemic though, which shows homeopathy was very effective. And very a lot of doctors at the time published their results, and they had very few deaths, like less than 10% deaths happening within those the homeopathic community.
Compared to what percent of deaths outside of that? Any idea?
Oh, I can't remember right now, but it was very high. I think it was like 40%, 50%.
Wow.
So I can't look that up.
And I apologize that I didn't know this up front, but you are a homeopathic practitioner, right?
Yes.
And was it your practice that inspired you to make this film, or why did you want to even tackle something like this? It's a big project.
It's a huge project. I was at the beginning of my career, and there's that side of you that goes, damn, you know, homeopathy is really hard. It would be just so much easier to throw a drug at it. I want to know that what I'm doing is actually making a difference and really helping, or is there an easier way that I could help people? That was one side of things. And then I was attending a conference in Toronto, a homeopathic conference, and this immunologist from Cuba who works for a pharmaceutical company that specializes in vaccine production, Dr. Gustavo Bracho, who even has patents on vaccines himself, he did a huge study in Cuba using homeopathy as an intervention for an epidemic of a disease called leptospirosis. I know most people in North America and Canada and the U.S., maybe in Europe, don't really know what leptospirosis is, but in tropical countries, it's a very common illness, and it can kill, I think, around 10% of people who get it.
Wow.
And it's spread through water. So in places where there's a lot of hurricanes, I'm looking outside my window because I'm in Mexico and we get hurricanes where I'm at right now. It's a well-known disease. So and the Finley Institute, where Dr. Bracho worked, was the only place in the world that created a vaccine against leptospirosis for human use.
Okay.
So our animals in North America are all vaccinated for leptospirosis, but humans are not, and this is the only one in existence. So in 2007, they were hit by a terrible hurricane, and as it spread through water, people were exposed to water, and there were already elevated cases of leptospirosis that year in Cuba, and they were facing an epidemic. They were out of vaccine. They didn't have enough to go to the population. And on top of that, they know that you're not supposed to use a vaccine during an emergency situation, an epidemic. It takes two doses, I think 4 months to infer immunity. And so they started experimenting with homeopathy, and they decided to make a homeopathic remedy from the local variant of leptospirosis, and they got it out to over 2 million people.
Really? Okay, so then I'm sure he tracked the results, and where did that lead us?
Well, it definitely a huge reduction in leptospirosis cases. But where it gets really interesting is that the following year, so this intervention, to clarify, was only in three provinces of Cuba. And then the following year, hurricanes, it was the worst year on record for hurricanes. They hit the entire island. I think there were three hurricanes that came. And now they were able to trace leptospirosis numbers. They had a control area and they had the intervened area. Right. So in the controlled district, cases of leptospirosis went up by almost 30%. And in the intervened area where they did the remedies, the cases of leptospirosis were down by 87%.
Oh my, that's a huge difference.
It's a huge difference.
So this treatment was inferring future immunity, I suppose. Is that the conclusion?
Yeah, so they did 2 years worth of remedies. So that first year, the first intervention right after the hurricanes, they gave a 200 C potency, and then they came back the next year and gave people a 10M. And then they followed up to see how long that immunity would last. But they found that it started to wane, but they don't know if it was because the actual immunity was waning or because there was a change in population as like people come and go from a certain region.
And what did the treatment protocol consist of? How many doses?
One dose of 200 C. So
just
they gave
one
it
dose?
One dose, which is just these, they didn't do pellets there. They did liquid. So they just came, they went around from workplace to workplace, from school to school, asked people if they wanted to participate, told them that it was what it was, that it's safe, it's completely non-toxic, what it was hoped it would do. And they gave people a little dose at work, and then they followed up a year later with a dose of a higher potency. And that was that.
So just two doses spread out.
Two doses. And it doesn't need refrigeration. It doesn't.
Right.
It's so much simpler and more affordable to disperse to a large community.
And it doesn't contain mysterious nanoparticles of unknown origin. Right. So who knows what's in those?
There's no graphene.
Right, exactly. So this, obviously, homeopathy would revolutionize medicine if it were fully embraced, but as you say, there's not a big profit model in it, and it could make obsolete a huge assortment of high profit prescription medications right now, and then combined with other forms of alternative medicine as well. I mean, homeopathy has its limitations and its applications, but there are other forms that can come in and do amazing things as well. So no wonder no one of the establishment doesn't want anyone to see the film.
Yeah, it was even hard to get funding to make the film. I ended up having to fund from the community itself and do crowdsourcing. But it was interesting how hard it was to get into festivals. I had a few festivals around the world that it did play at, but the programmers came to me and told me they were scared to air this film.
No kidding. Well, I'm not surprised. I mean, part of the so-called consensus of mainstream science is to be the gatekeepers and make sure there is no debate on issues like homeopathy. And the way they achieve that is by silencing voices like yours.
Yes, basically. And like yours.
yeah, exactly. Yeah, you don't have to tell me about it. Yeah. But tell our audience, though, what are they going to learn in your film?
Okay, so one is exactly what you just talked about, was the media and how they misportray what is actually happening in real life. I had some very significant magazines from Canada interview me on homeopathy. I treat a lot of vaccine injury in my practice, and they discovered me by talking to people who claimed that vaccines had caused their problems. And so they came, interviewed me, and then they just right out lied about all the research I gave them. They said
course.
It hadn't been published in peer-reviewed journals. And so I confronted them, and they said, well, you know, that's the format and how we work.
Yeah.
And that was their excuse.
Right. No, they come to you and they say they want to hear your side of the story, but they're actually just planning a hit piece full of lies.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. And then we followed a hit piece that they did on CBC in Canada on a show called Marketplace. And that sets us on an exploration of what is really going on in the world and how is homeopathy actually affecting people's lives, and is there any solid evidence to support its use? So I go to Africa, to Tanzania, where there's an organization called Homeopathy for AIDS in Africa, for health, sorry, and they work with AIDS, Homeopathy for Health in Africa, and they work a lot with AIDS patients. And we look at the successes they've had. The problems in a place like Tanzania is that there aren't many lines available of care and of drugs for those with AIDS. So there aren't a lot of recourses available for these people. Yeah. And most half the time they can't even get to the town they need to be to get their prescriptions filled, that sort of thing. So along comes homeopathy, along comes Homeopathy for Health in Africa, and they end up, they go to villages to where no medical practitioners come. They set up at hospitals, they work in conjunction with hospitals, and they start giving people homeopathy and they get better. And now the hospitals get really interested and they start participating and they start learning about, the doctors start learning about homeopathy. It's quite fascinating, actually.
Yeah, and that's a really important point, that homeopathy allows people in developing nations, many impoverished people around the world, to be able to connect with effective and safe medicine without relying on the central control of Western nations. So you know how in the United States, sometimes drug companies like to say, oh, we're donating, you know, because we're such good companies, we're donating, you know, 50,000 bottles of this to Africa. And usually it's stuff that's expired, by the way. But if you really had compassion, you would teach people in Africa, like you're doing, about homeopathy and about self-reliance. I mean, they can do their own homeopathy. They can learn to, you know, grow their own food and not depend on Western food supplies and so on. I mean, real compassion is teaching people to not need the centralized system.
Yeah. To be self-reliant.
That's right.
And that's what's amazing about homeopathy. Like, I teach an online course helping people to become medically self-reliant. And there's so much that you can address at home easily with homeopathy, and you don't need to go to the doctor for every little thing. I mean, there are obviously times when it's absolutely the right thing to do, but you can do so much to exit the system and the medical system using alternative medicines.
Let me ask you this question, Anand. I mean, thank you for answering that, but here's something that often concerns me about the way patients attempt to interact with alternative medicine or complementary medicine. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure you've seen this in your practice. So patients bring an allopathic mindset often to a homeopathic practitioner, right? They say, oh, I have this symptom, you know, doctor, cure me with something, so that I, the patient, don't have to take any responsibility in my own health. You see that?
Yes. Oh, for sure. People come in, they're looking for a drug. They're looking right. for a medication that's going to make their symptoms just magically disappear. What's cool about homeopathy is we don't just address the one symptom, though we can, and often it works well that way, not always. But we look at the whole person. So what's important to us is how they think, how they feel, how they respond to times of stress. Why is their body reacting in this way? And what are their patterns and how their body reacts? We could have 10 people with the same flu and they all have slightly different symptoms and they're all gonna need a slightly different remedy.
Right.
So it's, as you said, it's individualized. And then people think, I just go once, I get my medicine and I leave and I should be fine. But it also doesn't work that way. It doesn't work that way with Western medicine all the time either.
Right, exactly. Well, and so here's a follow-up question. Sometimes people may have, let's say, a vitamin D deficiency, right? Or a vitamin C deficiency. You know, if a patient presents with something like scurvy or rickets, then, you know, there's something where a macromolecule, let's say, you know, a really big giant molecule compared to, you know, the quantum level, is really what they need. And do you ever say to somebody like, oh, I looked at all your symptoms and, you know, guess what? You should clean up your food, your diet first, And then we can deal with even more subtle energies and so on. Is that ever part of the practice?
For me, it is. We study a lot of nutrition, and like half the work is nutrition, really.
Oh, really? Wow.
I think so for me, especially I used to live in Canada, and you'd see that everyone has a vitamin D deficiency.
Yeah.
You know, people really need to change their eating habits. And what people think is eating healthy isn't always.
That's the truth.
Correct. I've had patients come in and be like, well, I have a hot chocolate for lunch and a muffin. I think I'm eating really well.
Yeah, I've heard that too. Oh my goodness.
So definitely educating people on nutrition, the building blocks of our body, but homeopathy can still work. One of the stories I looked at in the film was the Banerjee Clinic in Calcutta in India. And there they treat a lot of cancer.
Is that right?
They don't touch nutrition at all with their patients. I've asked them about this.
Wow.
And people still get better. So, I mean, I think nutrition is extremely important. I'm right now being in Mexico, I have to bring my supplements from the States. Not everything's available here. I definitely think they're important. But I've also seen homeopathy work despite bad nutrition.
Well, and it's, you know, the whole person, as you well know, exists at many layers, right? There's the physical body layer, the physiology layer, the functional layer, and then mind and spirit, and maybe other, you know, other interpretations of those layers. There's an energetic lattice that exists upon which the frame of the physical matter is hanging, it seems. And then there's the mind-body interaction and intention and divinity and all of that stuff. And it seems to me like homeopathy is able to tap into those multiple layers in a way that simple, you know, kinetic surgery or pharmaceuticals just cannot tap into. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, I think, for example, we have remedies that can help you better absorb the nutrition that you are getting. Sorry, I'm going back to that. But yeah, like we really think on the energetic plane. How is that person, like, what is that person's perspective on life? And that will address a remedy that we're going to give.
Yes.
What scares that person? What level are they at? Are they in a spiritual plane where they're really focused on the salvation of their soul? Or are they really focused on work? Or are they focused on artistic development? All those things. Like where that person is at in terms of their development leads us towards a type of prescription for them.
So a homeopathic practitioner is also, in a way, an artist, right?
It's not easy.
Yeah, there's clearly some level of intuition that's required. I mean, I know there's a lot of evidence and you know, history with other patients and things like that. But isn't there also something more where if you get a sense from someone of what they're challenged by, that could alter or enhance what you're recommending?
Yeah. So there are different layers or levels of prescribing. One is you can prescribe on the very physical level. Oh, you've got a hurt ankle. It hurts worse in the morning when you first start moving it. It warms up. You start to feel better. That'll give me an idea for a remedy like Restox right away. So I don't have to go too deep. But for really deep healing, to change that constitution of the person that's keeping them stuck in patterns that reflect physically, emotionally, and energetically, you need to go deeper. And there is a lot of intuition involved, and that's where having a really good homeopath can make a difference. I think a lot of homeopaths aren't as well trained as we'd like. Maybe they have a good grasp of the mechanical side of homeopathy, where a lot of our research is based. But for that really deep transformational work, I think you need a really experienced homeopath.
That makes perfect sense. And I'm glad you brought this up, because I've noticed this too in all my years, that often the physical symptoms that present in someone are really the last in a chain of events that has started often with emotional trauma, an event of shame, sometimes parent-child relationships, many other relationships, or people who've been subjected to real trauma, like a veteran who saw some crazy things happening. And then over time, that mental or emotional state then gets materialized into the physical, into the physiology of the body, and then that becomes symptoms. But it all started from this other crisis event, right? Sometimes.
Yeah, I think most of the time it started from a crisis event, unless it's even a clear injury. Like, I think even injuries can come along when there's something going on in your life and they're trying to, the universe is trying to tell you something, send you a message.
Yes.
So I think you can address almost all illness from that level. And by paying attention and focusing. But that's exactly what makes homeopathy difficult is the never well since. Where is the foundation of this based? And how can I get to that point in time? Maybe it was at 3 years old, their sister got a bigger slice of the cake.
Right.
And they've internalized that, and that's leading to a new perspective on life. I'm not loved. I don't get the big slice of cake. It can be that small, or like you said, it can be trauma. I've had patients who've been tortured. I've had a patient, who heard a few bad words from their parents and that traumatized them. Everyone's very different as to what level of trauma they can handle or right. how they interpret things in their life.
So is there a homeopathic organization that you recommend that people can go to if they want to find a practitioner local to them?
There is Americans for Homeopathy Choice, and their website is homeopathychoice.org.
Okay.
So I believe they can hook you up with a local homeopath, but they're also an incredible advocacy group, and they've worked with government, and they've tried to work with the FDA to ensure that homeopathy stays around in the United States.
Yeah.
So I'd recommend everyone to go there. And I'm just blocking out the name of the organization that I love. I'm just going to look it up.
Yeah, just look it up. No, I'm showing the website here, Americans for Homeopathy Choice.
Yeah.
So that's great. Kind of a health freedom site. And it'd just be horrible if the FDA tried to outlaw homeopathy. Now, I know they've been sort of at war with it for many years, but what's the current status in the minds of the FDA for homeopathy?
Ooh, it's not very good. The FDA has, in the past few years, they put out a document, a draft guidance document on how homeopathy should be addressed, and they've just decided to not keep it in draft form. So it's now become official documentation for the FDA. They've decided that homeopathy needs to be considered a new drug and
what?
Is now unapproved. So they are free to start taking remedies off the shelf.
Well, that's crazy. How can they claim it's a drug when they say there's nothing in it?
Right?
Right.
And the history of homeopathy is really interesting. Royal Copeland, who was a senator who helped bring in the FDA, he was the one who brought in the Food, Drug, and Cosmetics Act. And he was a senator in New York, and he was a medical doctor as well and a homeopath. And he brought in the FDA, as they were creating the regulatory framework for the FDA, they brought homeopathy in because he wanted to protect homeopathy.
Uh-huh.
There are all these substances or all these medicines being labeled as homeopathic when they weren't, and they were causing harm.
Oh, wow.
So he wanted to make sure this wasn't happening anymore, and he brought homeopathy in under the umbrella of the FDA. It's always been thought of as grass, generally regarded as safe. And that's not what the FDA was put in place to govern, really.
Right.
They're there to protect people from harmful and toxic substances. And homeopathy is by its nature inherently non-toxic.
That's right.
So asking homeopathic medications to go through a drug approval process, which is looking at the toxicity and the potential harm of a medication, is ridiculous. And it's also more expensive than any homeopathic pharmaceutical could afford in the States.
Of course, but I think also after COVID, more and more people, especially Americans, realize that the FDA is corrupt, that it is an extension of Big Pharma, and that the FDA routinely makes decisions, regulatory decisions, in the interests of pharmaceutical companies rather than the safety or the health of the American people. The FDA is one of the agencies that, in fact, Robert F. Kennedy Jr. wants to completely gut if he becomes president, which I agree with. I mean, gut the NIH, the FDA, the CDC, fire them all, start over, and do it differently. You know, why should food and drugs be under the same roof anyway?
No, exactly. And, you know, we get that revolving door between the FDA and pharmaceutical companies. It's the same people working for both areas, and the FDA is mostly funded by pharmaceutical money.
That's right. That's right. Talk about conflicts of interest.
Right.
But again, this is in many ways a tipping point or a turning point, I think, in the minds of the American people. And the nice thing about homeopathy also is that, you know, they last a while. I don't know what the official shelf life is, but, you know, you can get them and they last. Well, what are your comments on that in terms of shelf life?
We have remedies from Hahnemann's time, the founder of homeopathy. We have his remedies still extant in Germany. I got to see the kit that he made himself.
Wow.
They're still effective. So technically, they really shouldn't have an expiration date unless they're in a liquid, because then it can, obviously, bacteria can start growing in it and taint it over a few years. But yeah, technically they shouldn't have a shelf life. If they're exposed, we do have research that shows that they're exposed to microwave radiation. It can it can make them useless, but they're not going to hurt you.
Right. So this is something that could be part of everybody's, you know, medical kit, and I know it is for many people. I think Arnica, by the way, is probably the most common one that people know about for pain relief and inflammation and so on. But what are some of the other more popular homeopathic remedies that people should pay attention to?
Mm-hmm. A really big one for me is arsenic amalgam. And I think that one tends to scare people because it has the word arsenic in it.
Right.
But it, as we said, it's highly diluted. It contains no arsenic in it, maybe a few nanoparticles of arsenic. But it's it was a great remedy during COVID. It's a great remedy for colds, flus, allergies, asthma, stomach issues. That's one of the remedies I go through the most.
Really?
No kidding. At home.
Huh.
Calendula.
Yes.
So calendula is also used herbally, but it's an incredible remedy for healing tissue. There's so many remedies. We've got thousands and thousands of them. But what else am I really?
Aside from watching your film, then what's the best online resource that you recommend for people to just learn more about homeopathy and look up remedies, things like that?
So the internet is the most incredible pharmacopoeia. So you just type in the name of a remedy that you're looking for, or you type in homeopathy for blank, and a lot of things will come up.
Okay.
And that, to learn more about homeopathy, I definitely recommend people take courses, read books. There's a lot out there. So one of the main resources in the United States is the National Center for Homeopathy. There are a lot of resources on there.
Okay.
And they also list out different homeopaths in your area. They hold conferences, they do courses. In the UK, For Homeopathy, or 4-H, is a really good organization as well.
Okay.
And those are two key resources. To learn about research, I highly recommend the Homeopathic Research Institute. They're based out of the UK.
Okay, excellent.
And there are infinite numbers of resources online. There's so much for people to access.
Well, this is great.
There are mom groups out there too. So moms who have really embraced homeopathy, they learn together, they study, they support each other when one of the kids is sick. So I had a lot of groups on Facebook, for example, where people are doing this. So all it takes is some basic initial research, and you have a whole world at your fingertips.
All right, perfect. And in the meantime, folks, if you want to check out the film, it's called Magic Pills, and the website for that is magicpillsmovie.com, and it looks like you can stream it for, you know, under $5 here and watch the film and help support Ananda Moore in her efforts. Ananda, really appreciate you joining us today. This has been fascinating. It only scratches the surface, obviously. I hope we can talk with you again, but I really want to thank you for taking the time today.
Thanks so much, Mike. I really appreciate you bringing me on, and I'd be happy to come and chat about everything that's happening in this world. Anytime.
Well, I have a feeling we'll need you back on, because there's something else probably that's gonna hit humanity, you know, the next pandemic. Mm-hmm. So let's make a note to get you on, talk about that, maybe save some lives and empower some people with some things. So we'll set a date for that. I'll have my producers reach out to you. But
sounds good. And thank you for considering homeopathy, because very few people think about it as an option and as something that we need to be discussing in these times.
Well, yeah, I don't know what to say about that, but you know, small minds don't have a great future. I think we have to have a big cosmic view of who we are, you know, where we are in the history of human civilization, the things that have yet to be fully understood. And, you know, homeopathy is one of them, but it's also an ancient technology that's been with us for, you know, I don't know, since the dawn of human civilization. So why not look at it? I mean, we don't have to understand how every molecule works. Not everything is chemistry. I mean, most of our reality is not chemistry. It's actually mind and soul. But anyway, we can talk about that in more detail next time.
Sounds great. Thanks so much.
You bet. Great to have you on. And thank all of you for watching. I'm Mike Adams of Brighteon.com. And as always, you can repost this interview. And also, if you haven't yet looked into homeopathy, do yourself a favor. Check it out. Try some of the remedies. They're incredibly safe. Non-toxic, as Ananda told us here in the interview, and that's absolutely true. And, you know, I've used homeopathic remedies for decades. I mean, it's just been part of my kit for a long time. But check it out, and thank you for watching today. Feel free to repost this interview on other channels if you'd like to, and take care of your health. We'll talk again soon. Hope you enjoyed this. Today's interview is brought to you by healthrangerstore.com, where we have, of course, lab-tested almost all certified organic products for health, nutrition, for personal care, for home care. If you take a look at healthrangerstore.com, you can see here we've got turmeric gold plus, detox foot pads, colloidal silver nasal spray, organic elderberry and echinacea extract. This is the one that was formulated by Dr. Ed Group. It's really amazing. We have non-fluoride toothpaste alternatives. This is an amazing toothpaste product that I helped formulate. Aloe vera extract powder, so much more, really hundreds of products, freeze-dried organic blueberry powder. This is very high in anthocyanins. Just amazing. If you check out the full product line, you'll be blown away by what we have available right now at healthrangerstore.com. And every purchase helps support this platform and our desire to bring you the truth, to bring you fascinating guests, information that can help you prepare for the madness of the world that seems to have consumed our planet at the moment. My goodness, you're going to need health and nutrition to make it through everything that's coming, because where we are right now is only the beginning. So we appreciate your support. HealthRangerStore.com. Take care.